This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Roger Munn,
Stuart Burks,
Mike Behrens,
and I'm Finlay Mason. Michael, we've talked a little about your earlier career in law. We're interested in sort of following that up a little bit more now. Perhaps you can assist us with some of the criminal activity, criminal cases that came up within the city.
Well, I suppose you could say I was lucky enough, but a lot of people wouldn't see it that way, to appear in quite a few well-known cases. And they were very difficult to do, of course, because generally, because you were acting for the accused, the accused wasn't the most popular person in town, even though his guilt or innocence had not been established. They were cases that you had to think about a lot and actually affected your day-to-day living quite a lot too, because you couldn't go places or you didn't want to go places where people might be talking about it and so on. So in a little, comparatively little local community like Palmerston North, yeah, there were some difficulties to get things right.
And that would be the case. Everyone in the city would be aware of that case going through the courts at that time.
Yes, just about. Yes. Yeah. So the obvious one is the Lundy case, which I can't really talk about because it's still the subject of court proceedings. It's yet again gone to an appeal. But that was the most intense case that I was ever involved in. And the total story has not yet been told. Mm. But there were other cases.
There's John LaRoche.
Yeah, John LaRoche, yes. He was the man who killed his wife outside the family court.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That led to all the increased security in
there. Well, it did, but there was never a question about whether he did it or not. The question for him was whether he was really sane. And I think he's still debating that. But he's been up for parole a few times and hasn't got it.
Yeah.
Very sad case.
Very, very sad for the whole family and everybody.
Yeah.
You spoke about the awareness of the community of cases going through. Do you ever feel personally threatened representing parties?
No, never. I never did. And I don't know why that was, I think. Maybe it was something to do with my own attitude to it.
Yeah.
Because I felt that if people were antagonistic, that was their problem, not mine. Yeah. So that's the way I used to play it.
Yeah. Were there ever any cases of lawyers in your position defending people that have actually been attacked in Palmerston North? Or?
Lawyers have been attacked.
Because of this,
not that I'm aware of.
I don't recall any.
No, I think people didn't go to that extent, but I think there was often a murmur about, you know, things. And,
Sometimes
with lawyers, there's a question: are there any cases where you're really not comfortable with the end result?
I've had one case like that. Yes. It was a sex case where the accused was the partner of the mother of the children, and they all lived together. And suddenly one day the young girl came out and suggested that he had, not suggested, said that he had indecently touched her. And I represented him, and he, of course, had the right to give evidence. And in the end, he said he didn't want to give evidence, although he was felt in two minds about it. And I found out later that, according to one member of the jury, and you only hear these sort of passed on without, not too deliberately, but that the jury would have liked to have heard from him, which made me realise that maybe if he had given evidence, that they might have had a different attitude. He was convicted, and I don't think he should have been convicted. Mm. And that's about the only case, really, that I'm upset about the result.
Yeah.
There's an issue as well. You're dealing with a case through the court, and then there's a judgment, and for you it's finished, but for the people involved, it's they're carrying that for the rest Indeed. Of their lives. Is that some... is there an ongoing effect for you, or you see that difference?
Not for me. Not for a lawyer. You tend to move on. But as far as the families of the deceased person, if it's a murder or the victim and so on, is concerned, then there is parole. And if a person has been sentenced to imprisonment, then every couple of years he comes up for parole. Yeah. And in some cases, the family goes along each time. And where the family, where this person has got a long, long sentence, this really makes a big hole in the life of the family. Mm-hmm. I'm very much against it. I think people should move on. Some very sad scenes I've had seen in the parole board.
They're expected to go?
No, they have a choice.
They
just choose to go.
And most do? Or?
No, not most. But those who do are very tend to be very adamant about it.
Okay.
And they, you know, you can tell they're sincere. They feel as though they are contributing in some way to justice.
Yeah.
But just for their sake, so I often want to say to them, for God's sake, move on.
Mm.
You know, you've got to...
It's just eating at you.
Your whole life is going to be consumed by trips to the prison and wondering. And, of course... It goes right down through the family. I remember one case where the family appeared in the case of a tragic killing of a young man, and I can understand the way the family felt about it. They brought along, I think it was an 8-year-old boy who was part of the family, and he was going to make submissions, and it was just uncalled for. In the end, he didn't, but, you know, I felt that I would like to say no.
So in your time as a lawyer, victim impact statements have been introduced.
Yes.
What's your feeling about that?
I think they're poorly handled. I think I'm not quite sure where we're at, but to me, even as a judge sitting in court listening to victim impact statements being read, they weren't achieving much. I don't know whether even they made the victim feel better or not.
Do you find certain standard phrases or terms closely scripted?
Indeed.
Something I wanted to ask you too, Mike. The use of lie detectors or experts that can look at a person and say, yes, they're lying or they're not lying, do you have much any thoughts on that?
No. Well, it's never been done in my experience, and the idea that someone can look at someone and tell whether they're lying or not, to me, is ridiculous. I don't care what they say on television.
No. Okay.
David Longy, in his autobiography, was talking about his court work and saying it's, you want to discredit the opposition or the opposing case and so on. And he said it can be very hard to show that a witness is lying, but it's very easy to make them look ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's right. Which is sort of unfair, really.
But is it a common technique you've found?
No, no. Most judges wouldn't let you get away with it.
Okay.
Mm.
We get the impression sometimes when reading about it, there's some lawyers would appear to resort to theatricals in there.
Some lawyers are hopeless.
Is this a deliberate part of the presentation then?
Well, it's the way they do things, really. I don't know whether they're aware of it themselves, but yeah, I mean, personally, I just feel so embarrassed when people go on like that, when lawyers go on like that, because I just think that there's no part of relief in the law for that. Histrionics.
Yeah. It's interesting with reporting, though, is it? In the summary, what they're doing is they're either they're selecting from the information to make a case, a story as to what happened, or discredit that and give an alternative and so on. In the reporting, they say, you know, in the summary, that the prosecutor said this, and it's almost reported as fact, as if that.
Yeah, well, that's just the way the reporting is done, and I sympathise there. Well, no, it's difficult to summarise maybe a 40-minute speech in two paragraphs. So, yeah, that doesn't worry me so much.
They shouldn't just be claiming that they are presenting. It's almost presented as if this is what happened because it's what the prosecutor said.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt because of the jury system that the jury has to make a decision.
Yes.
And so if a lawyer can point out weaknesses in one side or the other, that's legitimate.
Yes.
But that's all it should be. I mean, you can do that quite easily and properly without getting all emotional and dramatic, yeah.
And of course, they've introduced cameras, haven't they, into courts? And
yes.
Now, so what's your thoughts on that? Mike?
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I think that's good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
There are some cases come up where you wonder where the jury is really qualified to actually come to a decision on these. Is there a, and you wonder whether perhaps there's a, we've reached a time where there should be perhaps professional jurors. Have you got any thoughts on that?
Yes, I'd be dead against professional jurors. I think the jury system as such has a lot to... I think it's a good system. By and large, there are 12 people there and...
Which the prosecution and the defence both have the opportunity of trying to get a balance in the jury.
Yes.
Some judges have to preside over cases of very complex tax or construction issues. How can they be expected to know?
In a lot of those cases, they have experts sitting with them.
Oh, do they?
In the Environment Court, yes, they'll have someone with them.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
When you say sitting with them, quite independent of the specialist witnesses that the
parties they're part of the judicial decision process.
Right.
Yeah.
Now you spent obviously a long time in court and so on. There are many TV programs about legal practices and court cases and so on. One, do you watch them? And two, are they in any way realistic, given your experience?
Well, depends. Depends. If you watch an American program, you're snorting within the first minute. Yes, I think there have been some good programs that I do watch. I mean, there's recently the one with featuring the woman barrister now. What one was that? Silk. Remember Silk?
Mm.
I found that quite an interesting case. Interesting.
What about programs like Judge Judy?
I think
honestly,
she is.
It's pretty.
That is.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Do you know how
that's the populace.
They're paying her annually?
No, I don't.
It's about 50.
Don't tell me. Yeah, ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, she's got to bring the case to a close within a certain time, and so she does.
Yes. There's an English one with Judge Rinder.
Yes. I haven't really watched that very much.
You have to wonder how much of that is engineered as well.
Yes, you do, don't you?
You get some people who sort of make a profession out of appearing on.
They do, yeah.
So are there areas of the law that, you have to apply the law. Are there areas of the law that you are uncomfortable with?
Uncomfortable because of what?
In terms of the nature of the law, and you think...
No, not the nature of the law.
Okay.
No. Uncomfortable if I didn't know what I was doing, yes.
Okay. Right. And then in the... we have a system where, as you know, with criminal cases, people can be sentenced to prison and so on, and you've been on the parole board. Do you feel that our treatment of these people is about, there's the mix of how much should be punishment, how much should be keeping the community safe, how much should be remedial in terms of bringing them back into the community as worthwhile individuals. Have we got the balance right on that?
No. In fact, if you have a look at the Sentencing Act, I think you'll find that punishment itself is not a purpose of sentencing.
Mm.
So there's all sorts of rehabilitation and retribution and all those sorts of things. Punishment in itself is a negative thing. It doesn't help anyone. Just like the old days, you know, where the kid gets smacked for something in school, it didn't really help anyone.
No, they still carried on doing what they wanted.
Yeah.
Yes. Same with hanging, wasn't it? That was abolished in the 60s, wasn't it? But that never actually stopped people murdering people.
Well, it would stop those who were
hung. Well, it would stop them from beating, yes, of course. Yeah. Yes.
So are there other approaches that you've looked at? Well, in fact, even maybe there's talk about a separate Maori approach to...
No, I don't agree with that. I just think that the approach to sentencing should be broad-based.
Mm.
Should look at everything that's relevant, including the nature of the person to be sentenced and the cultural background and what they did and all of that, including what the victims have to say and so on. Everything's in the pot, and something that comes out should be a just result.
Okay.
But I don't think there should be any separate courts for anyone in particular or anything like that.
Yeah, okay. And in terms of, there's sometimes the term used, white-collar crime. Do you feel there's a big difference in treatment for...
Well, there is, in the sense that looking at it from the parole board point of view, essentially, a person gets parole if the board is satisfied that between the date of the appearance at the parole board and the end of their sentence, they will not reoffend. Mm. So often you're dealing, in the cases of white-collar crime, with the one-off, quite bad, dishonest offence. Mm. That person won't do it again. You won't have the opportunity to do it again. But theoretically, I take the view that he should get out straight away, because he doesn't need any programs. This is generally speaking, he doesn't need programs. And as soon as you say that, you say, well, why the hell did he get 14 years in the first place, or 12 years, or whatever? And yeah, that's a question. So,
well, that's the ability to repay what he's stolen.
Repayment, you see, that's the most important thing.
Limited, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, get a person into work and get them repaying. Of course, some of you can't. But you can surround people with all sorts of boundaries that stop them getting into this sort of thing again. For example, they're not to be employed in a accountancy firm, they're not... Yeah. To all that's these employment restrictions, and it's the probation officer's job to make sure that these conditions are met.
Mm.
Of course, the thing about conditions is they only last until the sentence.
Does it mean then that we're relatively light on white collar crime, or are we?
Well, when you say relatively light, compared to what?
Compared to someone could there could be a fraud case where people lose all their pension funds and so on, as opposed to someone who broke into a house and...
I don't think there's much point in comparing those sorts of cases. But in terms of white-collar crime, well, the jury's out for me.
Yeah. Okay. So what are your thoughts on the confiscation of people's properties and things that, that may have been...
No problem with that.
No.
Yeah. No. There should be a system which endeavours to put the victim in the same position that he or she was before the crime was committed.
Yeah.
And of course, in most cases, the perpetrator doesn't have any money or any assets, and you can't do this. But if there is property, I mean, you do find quite a few cases where the defendant comes along to court and says, oh, here's a cheque for thousands and thousands.
Mm. Yeah.
And people say, oh, he's buying his way out, but he's also paying reparation, which is good.
Yes.
Now, there's a lot of attention given to the Sensible Sentencing Trust. What's your...
Speaking generally, feel that they have no right to use the word sensible. Because it's not sensible.
Yeah.
That's speaking generally.
Yeah. It's removing the discretion in terms of parole.
Well, it depends what they're after. But, you know, to me, they seem to be people whose main activity is, I suppose I can use this word, sort of vengeance.
Because they're really arguing if someone's sentenced to, say, 14 years, they should serve 14 years.
Yes, that sort of thing.
Which means if that was brought in, then the sentence would be 7 years.
Maybe. Yeah.
Have you a concern for the resources made available to the prison staff, for instance, for rehabilitation?
I certainly do.
Yeah.
I've been to quite a few prisons, and I've spoken to prisoners who have been, for example, part of a Maori focus unit. Where they receive quite intensive work looking at their backgrounds, what they call tikanga, and things like that. And I've seen results where people have made vast strides. But then you go back to the prison and you find that the Maori focus unit has been closed down or shifted somewhere else. And I can't see why this is happening. But I'm certainly a fan of all those sorts of things.
I know at the local prison, there was sort of for security issues or something, it limited the volunteers coming in to help with literacy and so forth.
Yeah.
There's also an issue, I think, for prisoners when they're released in Britain, as there are halfway houses and so on. There's a limited amount of that, as I understand it.
Limited in Palmerston North, because one of the main places was the Salvation Army Hostel, which is closed down now.
Okay, yeah. There's PARS, Prisoners Aid Rehabilitation Society, and I think there's a home for, is it about 10 released prisoners can stay? There's a charity involved in that, but beyond that, I'm not sure.
Very little.
So when they come out, they go straight back to the community and the environment.
And the probation officer, and
And you occasionally meet people in the street that you've had dealings with, and they greet you, don't they?
They do,
yes. Yes, you told me a funny little story a little while ago about this chap who called you.
Yes, I was in the, I was in one of the supermarkets, and this voice said, "Hey, Judge!"
Judge.
So I looked around, and there was this guy that I recognised immediately. So we had a chat on how are you, etc., etc. Because the last time I'd seen him, he was wanting to get out. He was wanting to get community-based sentence, and I said, "No, you've got to stay in prison for a little bit longer yet. You've got to do things and so on and so on." Anyway, he was telling me how he had done things, and he was pretty pleased with the outcome. So that was quite.
Yeah.
So that was good. And then,
hey, Judge.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that happening? Say 50 years ago.
Not really, no.
Yeah.
I was getting into our car in the driveway just a couple of weeks ago when there were two guys walking by. Same sort of thing. Hey, Judge. And I said, oh, how are you? He said, oh, pretty good. He said, you're looking pretty fit still. So, thank you. And they went on their way.
He's just getting into it. Yeah. Oh, excellent.
Well, it is excellent because, you know, I think it's the way to be.
Yes, indeed.
Those people have recognised, they've paid their price and they're wanting to move on with their lives.
Yeah, I don't know that I put it as high as that.
Did you find being a judge was relatively isolating?
No.
No.
Okay. Not really, no.
Okay.
It was good fun.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and being in the, now you served as a judge in Palmerston North or
no Wellington
in Wellington.
Yeah,
okay.
Although I travelled around a lot, I saw the country.
Hmm. So what's to say you're sort of on a circuit?
Yeah. Well, this is when you retire. When you first retire, you get a temporary warrant, and then you're available for travelling. So I went everywhere from Whangarei to Invercargill.
Yeah, is there compulsory retirement for judges here?
Yeah.
At what age?
70.
Okay.
Right. 70, 72, I think it is now. Mm.
Okay. And then you call back for special royal commission?
No, that's it. No, district court judges won't get called back for anything, probably. It's the high court judges that get the plum.
But if you're on that circuit, a lengthy case could demand that you be away from home for some time?
Yes.
Okay. And you've got to the stage with your family at that time that kids are up and away and independent and...
That's right. Well, you know, my wife doesn't even know I'm not there.
Oh, well, on that note, I think we'll wind down now. Thank you very much for enlightening us, Mike.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to MPR. More details at mpr.nz.